I'm once again joined by Andy Lyman for this week's update on what's going on in New Mexico's political world. Thanks for joining us today, Andy.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Bryce.
It's pretty tame when it comes to the news cycle this past week, but I would like to talk about some of your cannabis reporting you've done on the past couple of days. Firstly, there's this issue on whether or not taxes on medical cannabis sales should have been deductible before this year. Can you explain why this is a point of contention and what you found in your reporting?
So just a real quick background on it. This has been going on for a few years now. A medical cannabis producer called Sacred Garden requested a deduction of their gross receipts taxes for a number of years. And then the taxation and revenue department said, no, doesn't qualify for a deduction. The argument there is that prescription drugs qualify for a deduction. And this company said, look, this is basically a prescription. The department said, no, it's a recommendation, right? The state law says that a doctor can recommend the use of medical cannabis, but it's not a prescription. So that's one of the big key points there. And so they had been sort of battling this for a while, went to the Court of Appeals, and they sided with the producer, the Court of Appeals did, but the state took it to the Supreme Court for extra clarification. And their contention still is that did not qualify. Now it gets a little complicated because when they passed legalization, when the legislature passed legalization, it included a very specific provision that said after June 29th, GRT will be deductible from medical cannabis. And so now the question is not going forward, but in the past, what did the legislature intend for gross receipts deductions? And so that thing won't be resolved probably for a couple of months. I believe there's a response due from the producer June 16th, I believe. And then there's another 6 days after that for the state to again reply. And then from there, it's up to the state Supreme Court to decide if they are going to hear it, but decide whether they need to hear oral arguments or if they can just rule based on the filing. So this could, you know, drag out to, you know, getting close to the fall before we have a resolution on this. And actually what it could mean is that the state could be on the hook for a lot of deductions. Now, you could get deductions and when you file the taxes, you still have to pay the gross receipts and then you ask for a deduction later. I'm not exactly sure the specifics or the logistics of how this would work, but I think potentially the state could be on the hook for a whole lot of money if the Supreme Court sides with the producer.
And if they do side with the producer, what does this mean for the medical cannabis providers in general? And I know you probably don't know the specifics, but does this mean that cannabis might have a different price point, or is there going to be missing money that's going to the state? How is that going to work?
Yeah, so generally speaking, on the first part of that, after June 29th, medical cannabis producers can start asking for those deductions, which ultimately means lower prices for, I've talked to some producers and that's kind of the gist of it is that, look, we don't have to pay this 7 or 8% tax on all of our sales so we can lower our prices. Now going back, I think it could mean that all these people could go back and ask for deductions from certain years. I'm not exactly sure how that would work, but potentially I think that these producers could go back and say, I want to ask for deductions from, you know, going so many years back. I think there's a statute that says you can only go back, you know, 3 or 4 years or something like that. So, but even that, you know, you've got 33 licensed producers. If they all go back 2 or 3 years, that could be a whole bunch of money for that the state has to pay out.
Yeah, that's a lot of speculation too there. And you're following this issue of cannabis purchasing limits to kind of move on forward in this conversation. What's the latest on that? I know a very vocal medical cannabis patient is asking a judge to rule on this issue. What's going on?
Yeah, so something I'll be watching in the coming weeks and days is what the judge rules on this. But essentially, I think it's been reported a few times that it's a lawsuit, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, maybe it is a lawsuit. But really what it is it's a writ of mandamus request. And so what that means is that Jason Barker, this medical cannabis patient, says he wants a judge to weigh in on this issue, which is, again, really quickly, the backstory on that is that as things are rolling out, a group of medical cannabis producers said, hey, the new law says that people can buy 2 ounces in every visit. The current limit for medical cannabis patients is 8 ounces in a 90-day period, which on the surface sounds like a lot more than 2 ounces. But if you consider that if you walked into a dispensary 5 times, you would already have more than that 8 ounces, right? You can buy 2 ounces at a time once they start what they're calling commercial sales. The problem is commercial sales don't start till next year. And the medical cannabis patient, Jason Barker, is saying you should roll the 2 ounce limit for patients now. And so we're going to have to wait to see what the judge says on that and if they actually call a hearing to sort of argue this stuff out in court.
Lastly, I do want to talk about the controversy happening in the Libertarian Party over the validity of their candidate for CD1, Chris Manning. This does get a little bit into the weeds as we were talking beforehand, but the party is, some people, specifically two people in the party, are saying that the state should not have granted major party status to the Libertarian Party. Andy, can you explain why this might be a big deal for libertarians in the state and what might happen in the future with this? I know it's not as important as we think it might be, but there is some contention there.
Yeah, so Chris Manning is a Libertarian Party candidate. He qualified to be on the ballot as a major party candidate, or Libertarian Party has major party status. A couple of people from the Libertarian Party locally are challenging that notion, and it's sort of an interpretation of current statute. The words in the statute essentially say, I won't get into the exact wording, but that's sort of where it comes down to, is some people say in order to maintain major party status, you have to have so many people registered in your party, but also have a candidate that has gotten 5% of the vote in the last general election or the last gubernatorial or presidential election. Now, the debate is whether that 5% threshold for the votes, it means that it's a candidate for president or a candidate for governor, or if it just means anybody on that ballot during that election. And of course, the Libertarian Party and the Secretary of State's office maintains, as long as anybody on the gubernatorial or presidential ballot got 5%, they get to retain major party status. The two people, Ginger Grider and James Clayton, are arguing, no, it has to be a candidate for president or governor. And that one I'm also going to be keeping an eye out for, because I'm not even sure that the Supreme Court has actually decided that they're really going to take it. They probably will, because it's sort of a principle matter at this point. Obviously, ballots are out. People have already, you know, submitted their ballots. You can't necessarily, the legal term is you can't put the genie back in the bottle. You can't, you know, take somebody off the ballot and sort of rescind those votes. People have already voted for Chris Manning, presumably. But it does sort of would add some clarification in there to have the Supreme Court say, this is how we interpret this law, and sort of clarify whether it has to be the presidential candidate, governor candidate, or just anybody. I think in one of the filings, the lawyer for Ginger Grider and James Clayton said, by that logic, you could have a quote dog catcher on the ballot that gets 5% of the votes. And of course, that's sort of a hyperbolic way of saying, you know, you could run for not city council, it's a different election, but you could run for a county commission, you could run for PRC, anything like that, court of appeals, some of those lower things. And that's a lot easier to get 5% than it is to get 5% for a presidential candidate.
Well, Andy Lyman is a reporter at NewMexicoPoliticalReport.com and the co-host of the Growing Forward podcast. And as always, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks, Bryce.